Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Yevamos Daf Samach Vov. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara Marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur represents the opening, the beginning of the new perek, the seventh perek of Yevamos. On the side of the Gemara, we have a nosei, a topic heading, where we also feature the mivneh, the structure of the Mishnah that we're about to see. You'll see there are Roman numerals 1 through 3. These are Shalosha Dugmois Shainois, three different examples, Shel Nisuin Bekahuna, marriages with Kohanim. Kohanim, as we have seen extensively in the past, have limitations on whom they are able to marry. So we're going to see cases where there are Kohen marriages. Ma din achilas truma. What is the rule concerning eating of truma? Kohen, in a straightforward case where Kohen marries a woman, even if she's a non-Kohen, the marriage entitles her to partake of the truma tithe, a tithe that only Kohanim are allowed to eat. But the Torah has a provision which says the Kohen ki ipne kinyan kaspo hu yochal bo, that a Kohen who acquires either a woman, a wife, or slaves, they are entitled to eat of truma. So we're going to be asking about the achilas truma. Number one, le'avdei melug le'avdei tzon barzel. That's number two. These terms, melug and tzon barzel, refer to items or property that a woman brings with her into the marriage. Property that she gets from her father's house and brings into her husband's domain. The difference between melug and tzon barzel is avdei tzon barzel, or property that's called tzon barzel, literally metal sheep. Metal is something that maintains itself. It doesn't erode, it doesn't depreciate, it remains as it is. So too, this of course is a borrowed expression, so too, property that she brings into the marriage and is recorded in the ksuba, recorded in the marriage document, whereby the value is noted and the husband accepts upon himself responsibility to cover its value. Namely, in the event that the couple breaks up, that he divorces her, if the property diminished in value from the time that it was brought into the marriage, he has to compensate for the difference. If it goes up in value, so he is entitled to benefit, to profit from that increase in value. This is in contrast with melug property. Melug is property that whose value is not recorded. The husband does not accept responsibility over it. He is entitled to benefit from any fruits that it produces, any income that he can realize from the melug property, but he is not obligated to worry about its change in value. This explanation, you can see, is found in the Rashi, which is worth going over together. Rashi, at the beginning of the Rashi commentary on the Perek, Almono l'kohen gadol hichnisa loy avdei melug, mashu isha machneses lebailo v'shoma loy. That which a woman brings into her husband, brings into the marriage, v'shoma lo, means an evaluation of is made of its value, the kablum olov bachres, whereby he accepts that value upon himself with a sense of responsibility and guarantee to making sure it's maintained. So he's mekabel olav bachrayas ksubasa kamosha kaisvim, as is customarily written, v'da nedunya dahan alos lei. And this is the dowry that she brings in to him. That's a quote, an expression that you find in traditional marriage documents. V'hu moisiv kenegdon, and he adds a property or value or money on his part. V'kosev sach hakol kibol of ploni kach v'kach b'tzubasa. That's Korin Son Barzel. All of that is called Son Barzel, whereby she brings in property, its value is recorded. The husband also dedicates to her a certain amount, and the sum total is recorded in the Ksuba. And of course, upon divorce, she gets that sum total. V'yesh shemachneses momen harbe v'eino koseves kulo b'ksubasa. There are incidents, cases where she brings in a lot of wealth to a marriage, and the entire amount is not written in. U'misheres la'atzma, and she leaves that aside for herself. Hein nichse maluk. Now, here's another major difference. The husband is entitled to the usufruct, but the principal is hers. If you're dealing with animals or slaves, and they die, so it's her loss. Vim hosiru, hosiru law. And if they increase, so they are for her. It's her increase. Loshon son barzel, the expression of metal sheep, Karen Kayam, the principle remains intact. Shein poches v'nifsad. It doesn't decrease or increase. Shafilu mesu kulon achrusinov. Even if all the malug creatures that she brought in, animals or slaves, even if they all die, he has to make good on it. L'shalim lo kishiyamus oyushena. That she is to be paid that value in the event that he dies or he divorces her. So the major difference between Malug properties and Tzon Barzel properties is that with regard to Tzon Barzel properties, the husband has accepted upon himself a form of guarantee or responsibility to with regard to their value. Not so in the case of Malug properties. The Mishnah. Almona l'kohen gadol, a prohibited type marriage. Grusha v'chalutza l'kohen hedyot, another example of prohibited marriages, where a kohen gadol, a high priest, is forbidden in marrying a widow. A kohen hedyot, a common kohen, is prohibited in marrying a divorcee or a woman that received chalitza, that was a yevama and was set free through the shoe removal ceremony. Well, given that you have these prohibited marriages and they took place, hechnisa loy avde malug v'avde tzon barzel. If she brought into the marriage servants that were not their value not written into the ksuba, that's the malug or the tzon barzel type properties, servants that were tzon barzel value was recorded in the ksuba, where he takes upon himself responsibility and guarantees their value. Avde malug lo yochlu betruma, avde tzon barzel yochlu. The malug type servants are not entitled to eat from truma, and Rashi points out avde malug lo yochlu fi shehen shelo. They're considered hers, as we saw before in the Rashi. He is the husband is entitled to benefit from their production, but the principle remains hers. L'kamen b'gemor meforash taima. Let's read that again. L'fi shehen shelo v'hi chalala. She, the woman, the wife of the forbidden wife of a kohen, has become ruined from ever marrying other kohanim. She's classified as a chalala. So she is disqualified from the kuna by having had consummated a marriage with these Kohanim. The Mishnah continues, after having contrasted Avdei Mulug versus Son Barzel and their access to Truma, V'elu hein Avdei Mulug, the following would be classified as Mulug servants, Imesu Mesu La, if they die, so she doesn't get compensation, they die to her, meaning it's her loss, Vim Osiru, Osiru La, and if they increase in value, so she is the beneficiary of their increase in value, Afalpi Shu Chayav B'Mezonoson, even though he, the husband, is obligated to provide their food, Hare Elu Loy Yoichlu B'Truma, they are not to eat from Truma. After all, she is a Chalola, the wife who is considered the owner of their principal value, is disqualified from the Kuna, and hence no Truma. V'Elohein Avdei Tzon Barzel, the following would be a description of Tzon Barzel, Im Mesu Mesu Lo, if they die, so then he has to compensate. They die to him, meaning it's his loss, and he has to compensate for their value. Vim Hilsiru Siru Lo, if they increase in value, so he benefits from that, he profits from that. Hoyovu Chayav Achriyuson, Hare Elu Yochlu B'Truma, since he is obligated to maintain their value, is responsible for that, so they are entitled to eat from Truma. He is a Kohen. He, even though he entered a prohibited marriage, that doesn't disqualify him from being a Kohen. Another type of marriage, Bas Yisrael Shenises L'Kohen, a legitimate marriage, a Bas Yisrael, her father is a non-Kohen. She marries a Kohen, and this is again a kosher marriage. V'chniso lo yavodim, and she brings into the marriage slaves. Bein avdei malug, bein avdei tzon barzel, hare elu yoichlu b'truma. Whether they are avdei malug or avdei tzon barzel, they benefit from truma. And here the chiddush is that even if they're avdei malug, where they are said to be hers, nevertheless, they are entitled to eat from Truma. She is the owner of them, and she is not disqualified from the Kuna by marrying a Kohen. In addition, Rashi points out that which we mentioned earlier. It's considered his acquisition, and as such, even though he's not obligated to guarantee their value, nevertheless, it's considered his acquisition. Ubas Kohen Shenises Yisrael. You have a case here of a woman who was eating Truma by virtue of the fact that her father was a Kohen, but now she marries a non-Kohen. As such, she does not eat Truma while she's married to the Yisrael. V'chniso lo yavodim, and she brings into her marriage slaves. Bein avdei malug, bein avdei tzon barzel, hare elu lo yochlu b'truma. Both kinds of slaves do not partake of Truma. Notice the arrow to the side of the Gemara text. You can align this with the arrow above. It's pointing to a line where it had been said that in the prohibited type marriage, the Avdei Malug do not partake of Truma. So the Gemara asks a question. Notice it's a long question. The Avdei Malug lo yochlu b'truma amai. Why is it that the Avdei Malug shall not partake of Truma? Leve kikinyonoi shekona kinyon. Let it be no different than an acquisition of his that acquired something. This has become clarified as we go on. Disanya minayin l'koyin shenosa isha. From where do we know a Kohen who married a woman? V'kono avodim. And the woman, while married, bought slaves. Actually, Rashi has a different take on this. Rashi says, Shenos isha v'kono avodim, oy kono avodim. From where do we know that a man that marries a woman or acquired slaves, that they eat Truma? The Kohen's wife, even if she's not a Kohenes, or the slaves that he bought eat from truma. Shenemar v'kayim ki yikne nefesh kinyan kaspo u yochal bo. That which the kohen acquires is entitled to eat from the truma. Uminayin liisha shekonsa avodim. From where do we know the case that we mentioned mistakenly earlier, but now is the time to say it? A woman who bought slaves, a married woman, a Bas Yisrael, who's married to a Kohen, and she bought slaves, and she bought slaves from money that was exclusively hers. Or the Avodov Shekonu Avodim, or a Kohen servant. That in turn bought slaves. So from where do we know sheyochlu b'truma, that they those acquisitions are also entitled to truma consumption? Shenemar v'kayin ki yikne nefesh kinyan kaspoi hu yoichal boi. And the drosha of this is kinyonoi shekona kinyan ocheil. So at this point then, we have a Kohen that acquired a Grusha who brought into the marriage Avdei Melug. So is this not all part of his acquisition? The Gemara answers, Kol ha'oichel ma'achil. One who is entitled to eat Truma has the potential of entitling others to eat Truma. Kol she'ein oichel. For example, the almona that married the Kohen Gadol, she becomes disqualified from the realm of kahuna. So she is ein ochel or ein ocheles. She doesn't eat from truma. Ein no ma'achil. Therefore, she cannot grant truma entitlement to others. The Gemara asks, is this rule hard and fast? We have on the side a mivne, a structural note where you see diamonds that appear. These are kushos al haklal. These are questions on the principle, on the rule, kol she'eino yichel eino ma'achil. Well, let's see. Hello, is that really so? The Gemara continues, v'harei orel v'chol hatmeim. A Kohen who is uncircumcised. Now, he does not eat from truma, but his slaves will eat from truma, or anyone who is tomei, he is defiled. People who are defiled, who are tameim, they don't eat from truma, but yet their slaves will eat from truma. So v'chola tameim, all of the orel and the tameim shenu oichlinu ma'achilin, they don't eat from truma, but yet they entitle their possessions, their acquisitions to eat. The Gemara says that the case of the orel and the tameim are not parallel to the almona married to the kohen gadol. Hasam pumayu koyiv lehu. This is an expression. We can translate it literally, but we have to explain it. Their mouths hurt them. They have a toothache. What does that mean? Basically, it means the orel or tmeim are external disqualifying or limiting factors. They're external. They're not inherent to the individual. The kohen who's an orel, he doesn't eat from truma, but not because he's inherently a non-Kohen. He's not inherently disqualified from the Guna. He has an external problem in that he can't be circumcised. Someone who is Tomei is inherently a Kohen. He's just temporarily disqualified because of the Tuma that he is experiencing. This is in contrast to the Almona that married a Kohen Gadol, where she by very definition inherently becomes disqualified from the kuna. She is now considered a total non-Kohen. Well, it's not an external limitation factor. Rashi makes the point that even the Orel will say that this guy can't circumcise. He hasn't been circumcised. When he gets circumcised, or if he would be circumcised, he would be able to eat. This almona has no tikkun. Once she had intimacy with the kohen gadol, she is ruined permanently from the kahuna. So they are they're simply unparalleled, and therefore there's no question. Question now: Arei mamzer she'ein oichel u ma'achil. In order to appreciate this, we have to see Rashi. Vare mamzer. Bas Yisrael Shenises L'Kayin. A non-Kohen woman that marries a Kohen, and they have the older Bas, and she has a daughter. Vabas Nises Lamamzer. The daughter marries an illegitimate husband, a man who's illegitimate. Vyolda Ben, and a son is born. Now that son is a Mamzer. The child of a Mamzer is a Mamzer. Umesa Vaben Kayam. The mother of the Mamzer dies, leaving her Mamzer son. Vare'en imo Eishes Kohen. This Mamzer child's grandmother was the wife of a Kohen. Oicheles Bishvilo Truma. Even though her husband, Achar Mises Baila, even though her husband died, the woman who had been married, the grandmother who had been married to a Kohen, continues eating Truma. Because there is a descendant from her husband, the Kohen. A woman who was married to a Kohen and has descendants from her marriage to the Kohen entitled her to eat Truma. Kidisan Besefa de Bepirkin, Vuhu Eno Ochel de Zarhu, the Mamzer grandchild, well, his father was a Mamzer, his father wasn't a Kohen. And he himself doesn't eat truma. He's a zar. He's a non-kohen. For who? And yet, he is not eating. But his grandmother, through him, is entitled to eat. The same model could have been created, could have been constructed had the grandson's father been a legitimate Yisrael. Nami ein ochel umachil ein imo. He himself wouldn't eat, but the grandmother would be entitled to eating truma. The reason that this was chosen, because you find a Mishnah with that example in it. So we ask in the Gemara, the case of the Mamzer, which in a sense, with Rashi's explanation, it's not limited to Mamzer, it simply means the grandson of a woman that had been married to a Kohen. She'ein ochel, that grandson doesn't eat. He's not a Kohen. His father wasn't a Kohen. U'machil, but he enables his grandmother, his maternal grandmother, to eat truma. This is a solid question. Now, on the side, we have a marking explanation. The trapezoid or volcano shape that you see represents, on the side we're reading our note, Shuvos Lasbir Loma Avde Mulug Shelamona Lekain Gadol Einam Oichlim Betruma. We try to explain the reason that the Avde Mulug of the Almona Lekain Gadol do not eat based on a rule that we just found to be faulty. The rule being, when here we saw in the case of the grandson of the maternal grandmother married to a Kayin, the grandson is Eino Ochel, and yet he is Machil. He causes her, the grandmother, to be able to eat Truma, which is, by the way, based on Psukim, where a woman that has descendants through her husband that was a Kayin, she is entitled to eat. So we have to explain the Mishnah. Why do the Avdei Malug of the Almona to Kohen Gadol, why is it that they do not eat from Truma? Amar Ravina, Kinyan Oichel Ko'amar. When the rule was stated of anything that eats of Truma can entitle others to eat, that is to be stated thusly. A Kinyan Ochel, an acquisition that eats, is what was spoken about. Kinyan ochel machil. She'eno ochel, a kinyan that is not ochel, eino machil. Just to repeat the main point, the explanation of Ravina is in light of the example of the grandchild. The case of the grandchild had nothing to do with acquisitions. So in non-acquisition cases, in grandchildren entitling grandmothers to eat from Truma, that can exist even if the benefactor, or the one causing the other to eat, is himself a non-eater. But when it comes to acquisitions, then this rule holds. Namely, an acquisition, a husband and wife, a wife is said to be acquired by her husband. A kinyan is we'll call it a deal, where a bond is formed, which didn't previously exist. So the bonding of husband and wife is termed kinyan. So if through the kinyan the individual is able to eat truma, they are able to grant truma rights to others. However, if the bonding is such that they themselves cannot eat, as is the case of an almona that married a kohen gadol, a widow that married a high priest, she becomes a chalola, she becomes disqualified from kahuna and truma eating. So she cannot entitle others to eat, namely the Avde Mulug, her kinyonim. Virova Omar, Midoraisa Mechal Achli. Truth be told, on a Torah level, the Avde Mulug are entitled to Truma. Rabbanan hu degazri behu. The Rabbanan imposed a restriction, Kidei Shetomar, so that this woman will come to her senses and figure, Ani Eini Ocheles, I cannot eat, even though my husband is a kohen. Avodai Einan Ochlin, my servants aren't eating either. Zona hi etzlo, she would be regarding herself as a prostitute with her husband. In other words, a real wife would be able to eat. A real wife entitles her servants to eat. Oh, these entitlements lacking here indicate she's not a real wife. Of course, we're speaking in figurative terms, and she'll then come to the conclusion that she's a zoina, and she doesn't want to be viewed as a harlot. Hilkach osi lafuka, and therefore this will bring about a situation where the Kohen Gadol, will divorce the Almona, which of course is what we want to achieve. Rav Ashi Omar, Gezeiro Shemotachil Liachar Misa. We want to restrict the Avde Malug from eating Truma because of a situation where the Kohen Gadol would die and they'll continue eating, and in that case in a totally forbidden fashion. The Rashi Shemo Tachil, we're looking at Rashi toward the end of the narrow lines, about six lines before they get wide. Shemo Tachil Avdei Mulug Shelo Liachar Misas HaKohen Baila. We're afraid that if they get used to eating truma while she is married to her husband, the Kohen Gadol, they will continue eating after he dies. When it comes to servants that are classified as tzon barzel, there is no need to impose this restriction. The hashto lav mishum dido achli. They're not eating because of her. Elo mishum kayin shu rabon. They're eating because he accepted upon himself responsibility, or we call achrayas, over them. They're viewed as his. So that when he dies, so then it's obvious that they would not continue eating. But with regard to the Avde Malug, when it's not obvious that it's through him, through their being his per se, so we're afraid that if they eat while he's alive, when we might be able to call it on a Torah level a kinyan, but when he dies, they have no right to eat whatsoever. But they will, the fear is they'll continue eating, being that they got used to eating when he was alive. Let's continue in the Gemara. Elo me'ato. If this is one's consideration, the fear that if we allow eating while alive, they'll continue after his death eating the truma. Elo me'atol bas Yisrael shenises l'kayin, a legitimate marriage where she is not disqualified from the kuna. She would marry a kohen, and we know that she eats truma, but we should say lo tachil, she should not. Of course, we say she eats from truma, but not only that, but her avdei melugas, we saw in the Mishnah, do eat from truma, but we should say they should not be entitled to eat from truma. Let her avdei melug be restricted from truma. Gzeiro shema tachil liachar misa, with fear that the avdei melug, her servants, and they're classified as such from the outside as being her servants, she's a bas Yisrael, they'll continue eating after the husband, the Kohen, died. And we don't ever see such a restriction. That brings us to a second presentation of Rav Ashi. Elo Omer Rav Ashi. And note, by the way, that this is a long response. The Almona Kohenes, we take a look, first of all, at Rashi. Ve'almona kohenes, bas kohen sheshava l'trumas avio mimisas baila. We're talking about an almona. We spoke about in our Mishnah, an almona that married a kohen gadol. The woman was herself the daughter of a kohen. When her husband dies, let's speak in general terms. A bas kohen that marries and then becomes an almona, her husband dies, she goes back to her father's house in a regular kosher marriage. A bas kohen that married a man and the man died, there's other details with regard to having had children, no children, but let's speak with keeping the child factor out right now. A bas kohen that married even if she married a non-kohen, and while she's married, she wasn't eating from truma. When he dies, she goes back to her father's house to resume truma consumption. Now, it's this kind of woman, an almona, that had been that she is a bas kohen. This woman now marries illegally a kohen gadol. Upon her marriage to the Kohen Gadol, she becomes a halola. She becomes disqualified from eating truma. And now we're dealing with this woman, and the law stated in the Mishnah that her avodim, the avdei melug that she brought into the marriage with the Kohen Gadol, Mishnah ruled they are not entitled to eat from truma. And we're here to explain that. So Rav Ashi says that with regard to an almona kohenes, the almona that the Kohen Gadol married was a bas kohen herself, we're fearful of what we call moira heter, the asya l'roye, we're fearful of her coming to rationalize, to explain away a real problem. Before we read the Gemara itself, we're going to learn the Rashi to serve as an introduction. The Rashi we were looking at on the right under the Gemara text at the end of the line, Balmona Kohenes, Bas Kohen Sheshova L'Trumas Oviyomi Mises Bailo, the daughter of a Kohen that goes back to her father's house to resume the eating of Truma upon the death of her acceptable husband, V'i Amrinon Yochlu Avdei Melug V'Truma V'Chaye Bailo Kohen Gadol Zeh, if we would allow her servants to eat truma during the lifetime of her husband, the Kohen Gadol, mishum kinyon shikona kinyon, based on the concept of his acquisition that acquired something, namely he acquired the wife. Some people, I know that nowadays as this recording is made, there are expressions that are called politically incorrect. So when we use the term kinyon, it doesn't mean one who buys a jar of mayonnaise in a supermarket. It means a bonding a legal bonding that took place between two people. So that bonding is called a kinyon that he made with her. And as a result of that, she is entitled to grant truma rights to others, namely, in this case, the Avdei Malug. We are afraid that if we allow that to take place, that we allow them to eat, Delo Goro Hach Chalolo Me'eved Shekon Avodim, she, even though she's become disqualified from the kahuna, she's no worse, she's no lower than a slave that acquired slaves. Nevertheless, Asya Leruye Hetero Achar Misoso Lahachilo Betrumo Machmasovia. We're afraid she's going to come to rationalize and explain that they should continue eating truma after the Kayin Godol, her husband's death, based on her father. The Omra, she will say like this, Meikara Bamanus Yerishain Hayu Avodai Oichlin Betruma Debei Nosha. Originally, when I became a widow, I'm at the first round, and I went back to my father's house, my slaves ate from the truma of my father. And then when I married my husband, the Kohen Gadol, if we would allow them to eat, she continues rationalizing, well, I married my husband, the Kohen Gadol, and they were eating truma based on him. Hashto kishemes, now that he dies, hadri lemilso kamaisa, I'll go back to where I was before this marriage. The yochlu avodai betruma debein osha, kamei korba manusi rishon, and my slaves will resume eating truma of my father like they did when I was an alman on the first round. But there's a major difference that she doesn't realize. On the first round, she wasn't a halala. But now she is a chalola, and she is no longer capable of entitling her slaves on her merit to eat truma. When she married the Kohen Gadol, say they weren't eating on her merit, they were eating by virtue of the fact of a kinyan, shekona kinyan. They were eating through his power, his entitlement. So now let's look at the Gemara. The Gemara is a bit terse relative to this Rashi, but hopefully we'll make sense of the words. So Rav Ashi in his stage 2, Bay's stage, says that the Mishnah is talking about a specific kind of widow. She's a widow who is the daughter of a Kohen, and we don't want her Avdei Malug to eat whatsoever after she marries the Kohen Gadol. The Asya L'Rish, she's going to come to rationalize. Meikara, when I was originally an almona, achli betruma debein osha. When I became an almona, my slaves were eating from the truma in my father's house. After all, they're my slaves, and I'm a bas kohen. And as a result of that, my slaves are entitled to eat truma. And since I am receiving truma from my father's house, I am able to entitle my servants to eat truma. Insevi le lahai, then she married the Kohen Gadol, achli betruma de gavroi. The slaves ate from truma, entitled to truma through my husband, the Kohen Gadol. Vahashto hadri, now that I've become an almona from through the death of my Kohen Gadol husband, hadri lila milse kamaisa, we'll go back to what we were doing beforehand, to the original state of widowhood, where they were eating from truma. However, there's a big problem. For lo yoda, she is not aware, de meikara, lo shavisa lenafsha chalola. When she was an almon on the first round, she had been in a kosher marriage and had not disqualified herself. Therefore, just like she was eating from truma, her slaves were entitled to eat truma from her father's house. Hashto shavisa lenafsha chalola. But now, she has made herself into a chalola by having married as an almona, a Kohen Gadol. She has disqualified herself from the realm of truma, and therefore she does not entitle her slaves to eat from truma either. Peinach Almona Kehenna. Still, this whole explanation is sufficient for explaining why the Almona, who herself is the daughter of a Kohen, and her Avdei Malug not being allowed to eat from Truma, because we're afraid of this entire scenario developing where the Kohen Gadol will die, and she now having become an Almona, a Halola that is disqualified from Truma altogether. Almona Bas Yisrael Mai Ika Lameimar. What about an Almona whose father, her own father, was a non-Kohen? So this whole scenario of rationalizing that they should go, when she becomes an Almona, second round, she goes back to her father's house, and just like she eats Truma, etc. So that doesn't exist over here. You don't have a first stage of Almonis where she goes back to her father's house and eats Truma. She's a Bas Yisrael. So what about that case? What about a woman like that who is an Almona? Her father is a Kohen. That is, her father's a Yisrael. She lost her first husband, marries a Kohen Gadol. Let her Avdei Malug eat from Truma, yet the mission doesn't seem to provide for that. So Ma'iko LeMeimar, what is there to say? Why shouldn't they be entitled to eat from Truma? That is, while she's married to the Kohen Gadol, even though she has become a Halola, nevertheless, those Avdei Malug, technically speaking, are no worse than they're a Kinyan Shikona Kinyonai. The Gemara answers a simple answer, Valmanusa, when it comes to the issue of widowhood, lo pligi rabbona. The rabbona don't start making distinctions. So since in one case of widowhood there is grounds for imposing this restriction, in all cases of widowhood we say widows that marry Kohen Gadols, their Avdei Malug shall not eat from Truma. On the side, we have a topic note, a nosei topic heading. It reads as follows: Machloikis Amoraim will see a Tanaic controversy, an Amoraic controversy, Be'inyan Nichse Tzoin Barzel, regarding the Tzoin Barzel type properties, Shel Zug Shemizgarshim, properties that were brought into a marriage, and the couple now are getting divorced. It's obvious that since it's Tzon Barzel, the husband doesn't simply take the properties that were recorded and that's it. If in the event that he would take the properties, he has to offer compensation to the woman, the wife that he is divorcing. So value is guaranteed. The issue right now is, let us say the husband doesn't want to give back the actual items that were recorded in the original Ksuba document upon which he had taken accepted responsibility. He doesn't want to give back the very items, but he wants to pay her their value. Vo'isha, let's read our note again from the point where it says Zug Shemizgashim Ba Roitzu Lekachas HaChafotzim Atzmom. The husband wants to take the actual item, the items, Veloseis Kesef Shavyom Lo Isha, and he wants to give a money equivalent financial compensation to the wife. Veisha Lo Maskimo, she doesn't exist. She doesn't agree. She's not in agreement with that. She wants the actual items. Hadin Im me. Who has the upper hand? Who calls the shots? Who decides? The husband or the wife? The Gemara, Itmar, Hamachneses Shum Labaila. The word Shum has to do with the word Shuma, evaluated items. In simpler terms, it's Nichsei Tzon Barzel. Their value was recorded for him to take responsibility. He omeres kelai ani no telus. Upon their divorce, she says, I want those very vessels. They're my vessels. I want them back. The hu omer domim ani no sein. And the husband says, I want those vessels. And in exchange, though, I will give you money or their financial value. Hadin imi. The rule or the law goes with whom? Who calls the shots? Who determines? Rav Yehuda Omar, we continue now on Omid Beis, top of Omid Beis, Hadinima. Rav Yehuda says she has the upper hand and she takes the vessels, the actual items that were that she brought into the marriage. Rav Ami Omar Hadinimo, and Rav Ami disagrees. He says that he has the upper hand and he can force her to accept their value. Rav Yehuda Omar, and the Gemara now goes over the two opinions, elaborates. Rav Yehuda Omar Hadin Imo, the halacha is determined, or the rule is determined by the woman. Mishum Shevach Beis Aviha Dido Have. Because of this consideration, it's items that she brought into the marriage from her father's house. I often view this as an expression of something we would maybe call sentimental value. But obviously it's not simply sentimental value, but it's value she has. Its value to her is because it came from her father's house. And therefore, she determines, she is the one to decide. Rav Ami Omar Hadin Imo, the husband has the power to decide. Kevon Diom Amar, since it said in our Mishnah, Im Mesu Mesu Lo Vim Hosiro Siru Lo, if the items that she brought into the marriage that were their value was recorded as Nichsei Tzon Barzel and they get destroyed, or if they are living things they die, he has to compensate for it. Or if they increase in value, he profits from that increase. Hoyel v'chayev b'achriyuson yochlu. This is what it said in Mishnah. Since he was obligated to maintain their value, in the case that the husband was a Kohen, he entitled them to eat from Truma. So we see that the Mishnah recognizes the Tzon Barzel as being more closely associated with the husband. Omar Rav Safra. Rav Safra, upon hearing this, says, Mi kotoni vehein shelo. Does it say in the Mishnah that the Tzon Barzel are his? All it says in the Mishnah is Hayil v'chayev v'achriyusin kotani, the entitlement for their eating of truma is not a function of their being owned by him, but rather by function of his having responsibility over them. Ula'oylom lavdi day ninhu, but in reality they're not really his. There's a difference between having responsibility, obligations to maintain value, versus something that's considered yours. The Gemara asks, in the note, the question lasts a number of lines. The cholhecha the chayav b'achriyuson achli b'truma. Is that really so? Is this the determining factor for truma consumption? The fact that you have responsibility over an item. V'hotnan. We have the following Tanaic source: Yisrael shesochar pora mikayin. A non-Kohen Yisrael that rented a cow from a Kohen. Hare ze yachilenu karshine truma. The Yisrael is able to feed the animal truma grains. Karshine truma is karshinim are vegetation, maybe the type of grain that animals will eat. Call it animal field that was that grew from plants that were tithed. So it's a truma tithe of karshinim is fed to the animal. Kohen shesochar poro miYisrael, a kohen who rented a cow from a non-kohen. Afopishim is a noiseo, even though the kohen is obligated to feed the animal. It's an animal that he rented, so you have to feed the animal. Lo yachileno karshine truma. He is not to feed it truma. So what do we see? We see the Kohen has a certain level of responsibility over the animal, and yet he does not feed it truma. V'tisbara. The Gemara responds to this question and says, well, explain yourself. Nehi nami de mechayev b'gnei v'aveda. Granted that one who rents an animal has a certain level of obligation. Namely, if it's stolen or it gets lost, we have to make good on that. If the animal, let us say, dies, let's say, something of an oinous nature. So oinous means something beyond one's control takes place, thereby eliminating the animal, or it depreciates, or it weakens. Kachasho, it weakens. Nifchas domeo, it depreciates. Is the renter obligated over that? So that this isn't a real example of someone that has full-fledged obligations over it. True, a certain level of responsibility has. He has to feed it. If it gets stolen or lost, he has to compensate for that. But he's not totally obligated to compensate for its value under all circumstances. Ha lo dam yelo l'seifa. The case of our Mishnah where the husband is fully obligated under all circumstances. That case, the case in the Mishnah, could be paralleled to the seifa, to the continuation of the source that we just read in the frame. What does it say in the Seifa? Yisrael sheshom para mikoyen, a non-kohen, a Yisrael, that acquired for use purposes, we could say he rented a cow from a kohen. However, it's not a standard rental. Sheshom means upon taking the cow, an evaluation was made. How much is the cow worth now, when the Yisrael takes it? The Yisrael guarantees the Kohen that I'll return the cow to you as is, assuming that its value is the same as at the time I took it from you, I started renting it from you. However, if there's any decrease in value, instead of giving you the cow that's decreased, that's been depreciated, I'm going to give you cash. So you have a case of Yisrael taking full responsibility over the value of the cow. Lo yachileno karshine truma. In that case, it becomes like the Israel's because of his level of obligation or his level of responsibility. It becomes like the Israel's. And Israel doesn't eat truma, he can't give the animal truma. Avol kohen shesham parim Israel, a kohen who did the same type of arrangement with the owner Israel, where the kohen accepts upon himself full, unqualified responsibility, even in the case of oinus, yachileno karshine truma. He does feed the animal truma, even though technically speaking the owner is a non-kohen, but since he, the kohen, took full responsibility over it, which we call achrayus, like we saw in the Mishnah, where there's full achrayus over something, so that it's then considered like he who accepted responsibility over it. And it's with that in mind that that we say that when you take responsibility over something, you are then entitled to feed it truma. Yosef Rabo v'Rav Yosef b'shili pirkei de Rav Nachman. Rabo and Rav Yosef were seated in the lecture given by Rav Nachman. Now the Shile Rashi says k'shishtiyem adrosha. So they were seated there when Rav Nachman completed his lecture. V'yasvi v'ko'amri, and they sat and said Tanyo kavosei de Rav Yehuda v'tanyo kavosei de Rav Ami. We have Tanaic sources on both sides of the fence. And this, of course, refers back to the issue of the Nichsei Tzon Barzel upon the discontinuation of the marriage, the divorce takes place. Who decides? Who's the decider of where the Nichsei Tzon Barzel go? We have one source supporting Rav Yehuda says she decides, and the other source supporting Rav Ami's position that says he decides. Tanyo kavosei de Rebbe Ami. So we present let's say, out of order, even though the Gemara said we have first, it says we have a source like Rabbi Yehuda and then a source like Rav Ami, here the Gemara presents first the source like Rabbi Ami, that the husband has the upper hand, has the power to decide, and if he wants the items, he gets it. It says in the source, Avdei Tzon Barzel, Yoitzin B'Shein Vayin Lo'ish Avolo Le'isha. Now this is a very terse quote. The Torah mentions that a man who owns a slave, or say the owner of a slave, when we say owner, we emphasize the word owner as opposed to an outsider. The owner of a slave, if he injures his slave, the term Shein V'ayin, literally tooth or eye, these are words you find in the Torah. There's more to the topic than just tooth or eye, but the term used in the halach is Rosh Eivorim. If the owner knocks out the Eved's, the slave's tooth, or blinds the slave, he knocks out his eye, the Eved, the slave, goes free. Now, in a marriage, a woman brings slaves into a marriage, and their value is recorded. The husband takes responsibility over them. The Mishnah tells us that if he, the husband, knocks out the eye or tooth, the Eved goes free. But if the woman, the wife, the very woman that brought them into the marriage, if she knocks out the Shein or Ayin, they do not go free. She's viewed as an outsider. As we said before, the halacha of Shein v'Ayin is relevant, in other words, freedom through knocking out Shein v'Ayin is associated with owner only, not with an outsider. So the fact that the Avdei Tzon Barzel will go free because of his, the husband's, knocking out Shein V'Ayin, that shows us that he is the ultimate owner of them. Tanya Kavosei de Rav Yehuda. Now we have a source supporting Rav Yehuda. Hamachneses Shum Labayla. Again, Shum are properties that were evaluated, and he, the husband, takes responsibility over them. Very simply, Tzon Barzel properties. Imrotza Habal Limkor Lo Yimkor. If the husband wants to sell those properties, he cannot do so. V'lo'od. And not only that, Elafilu Hichnis Lo Shum Mishelo. Even if the husband brings into the marriage items, and the items that he brings in are written into the Ksuba, their value is recorded. Imrotza Habal Limkor Lo Yimkor. If he wants to sell them, they cannot be sold. We should glance at the Rashi, Lo Yimkor. Rashi says, She'im Yigar Shena Titol Keleha. He can't sell them because if he divorces her, she will take those items. Mochru Shneem Leparnosa. If either the husband or the wife sold those for their, because they needed liquid cash, parnosa means for their maintenance. Zehoya Maisa Lifnei Rav Shmuel Gamliel V'Yomar. This happened where she, the wife, sold those kinds of properties, and Rav Shmuel Gamliel ruled Habal Moitzi Miad Halukuchos. The husband can extricate those items from the purchases. And Rashi adds, very importantly, and all the more so, it goes without saying, if she sold the properties, that he would be able to extricate them from the purchasers. But what we want to emphasize in this source is that he has no right to sell the properties, the Nichsei Tzon Barzel. What does that show us? Well, just like we saw very briefly in the Rashi, that's because in the event that a divorce takes place, she takes the property. She has the power to decide. That's what we meant by Tanya Kavosei de Rav Yehuda. Omar Rava, Omar Rav Nachman, Halacha ke Rav Yehuda. And here the Gemara rules like Rav Yehuda, that in the disbanding of a marriage, the nichsik sozel, if the woman wants those very items, she takes them. Omar le Rava le Rav Nachman, Vatanya Kavosei de Rabami. It's nice that you're ruling like Rav Yehuda, but what do you do with the fact that we have a Tanaic source supporting Rabbi Ami? Response. Afagav the Tanya Kavosei de Rabami, even though we have a source that supports Rabbi Ami, we saw the source with the Shein V'ayin. Mistabra Taimo de Rav Yehuda. The logic is stronger on Rav Yehuda's side. Mishum Shevach Beis Aviyah. Because of that consideration, it's property that was brought in, that originated in her father's, in her father's house. On the side of the Gemara, we have a topic heading, Veged Shel Nichsei Tzon Barzel, an article of clothing that had been written into a ksuba. The story involves the man having died. And generally speaking, when a husband dies, so the woman receives that which was written into her marriage document. So here we have an article of clothing that were written into a ksuba with their value, namely the tzon bar. It's a beged of tzon barzel. She loku yisaimim v'zorku al ames. The heirs, the children, took that article of clothing and threw it on a corpse, covered a body with it. There is a rule, and the Gemara will, if you learn the Rashi, you'll see that items that are thrown onto a corpse become forbidden to benefit from. They become osur bahanah. They become, we'll say, associated, attached with the corpse. And there are references and sources for that information. So they took an article of clothing that's tzon barzel and threw it on a corpse. Ha'im ha'isha yecholu litoin shabeged adayin shelo. Can the wife, can the widow claim that the article of clothing is still hers? Oi, shekonoi hames, midin tachriche hames, shasurim bahano. Or do we say that the corpse, so to speak, acquires it? It becomes part of the corpse, as is characteristic of shrouds. And we know that shrouds that are dressed upon a corpse are forbidden to benefit from. The Gemara. Hahi itza, there was a woman, the Ailu le Gavra, that brought into her marriage to a Gavra, to a man, her husband, itztila de milsa b'ksubasa. Itztila de milsa is a type of fabric, maybe it's silk, and itztila is a type of garment made of that fabric, and it was written into the ksuba. The value was recorded. Shachiv, the husband died. Shaklua Yasmi, the heirs took that article of clothing, Uparsua Amisna, and spread it over the corpse. Omar Rava, Kanyo Misna. Literally, the corpse acquires it. It means it becomes like a shroud, as the halachic, the legal status of a shroud, and it's Osir Bahana, like something that's sanctified. Omar Le, this is a name now, we have Nanoi Brei Rav Yosef Brei Derava. The speaker's name is Nani, or Nanoi. So Nanoi says, L'Rav Kahana. Omar Rav Omar Rav Nachmon, Halacha K'Rav Yehuda. That when it comes to Nichsei Tzon Barzel, we learned just above that the halacha is like Rav Yehuda. It belongs to the woman. So how is it that the Yesoimim could take her article of clothing and prevent her from benefiting from it, from having it become nichse or kinyona de misna, shrouds. Omale, Rav Kahana responds. Mi loy moide Rav Yehuda de mechusar guvayna. Does Rav Yehuda himself not concede that it's true that she's considered the owner of it, but she hasn't taken possession of it yet? Mechusar means something that's lacking guvayna collection. It's lacking her having actually possessing it or taking it. The cave of the mechusar guvayna, since it's not something that she's holding in her closet, it's not something she's in possession of. Birshusei koi. It's considered in the domain of the heirs. And there's a rule that is applicable to situations like this. Rava letame. Rava here, in ruling that this article of clothing, though it was written into the Ksuba, and though we paskin like Rav Yehuda that she is considered the owner of it, but she's not in physical possession of it. She wasn't in physical possession of it at this point in time when the heirs threw it on the corpse. And now the rule that explains matters. Rava letame, Rava in ruling that it becomes associated with the corpse, is consistent with his rule elsewhere. Diyama Rava. There are three points that are made, but we are going to focus only on the first point. They are Hekdish. Hekdish is sanctifying something. And in our case, putting something on a corpse is associated with the concept of sanctifying. Hekdish chometz v'shichur. Chometz is what everyone understands it to be. Chometz on Pesach. And shichur, that's the freeing of slaves. Mafkin midei shibud. They undo, erase, a lien that someone might have on the item. In this case, let's go over the case. Let's look at it. Let's go over the case through what happened in the Gemara. Let's make one assumption, and that is that the heirs that took the article of clothing that had been classified as Nichsei Maluk and Nichsei Tzon Barzel, they took it and threw it on the corpse. Throwing it on the corpse is the equivalent of sanctifying something. Let us say someone had Mr. A had loaned money to Mr. B, and Mr. B says that if I don't pay you cash, then you can take my cow. And before the debt was paid up, we see that a lien on the cow was established, Mr. A having a lien on the cow. But before the loan was before the loan was paid up, Mr. B, the borrower, he dedicates his cow as a sacrifice to the Beis HaMikdash. That is mafkia, that undoes the lien that Mr. A had on the cow, and Mr. A won't be able to collect that cow in compensation for the loan that he had extended to Mr. B. Mr. B is going to have to come up with the funds some other way, but not through that cow. The same thing over here. The garment that the woman had a claim on, based on it being Nichsei Tzon Barzel, but she wasn't in actual possession of it. She had a lien on it until she would actually take hold of it. The Yesoimim threw it on the corpse. It's as if they dedicated it. So that we have this rule that Hekdish, in this case throwing on the corpse, undoes the claim that she has on the actual garment. As far as what needs to be done now, she'll be able to demand compensation for that as Rashi says, that they'll pay her for what they did, but the main point for our discussion is she doesn't have a claim on the actual garment. So that even though we paskin like Rav Yehuda, that in the case of say controversy between husband and wife that are getting divorced, who has a claim on the actual garment, and Rav Yehuda rules that the woman has a claim on the actual item, in this case the actual garment, the hekdish, or in this case the throwing on the corpse, undoes that lien on the very item, and the item remains with the corpse, and the assignment will have to offer her compensation. The Gemara continues. Amar Rav Yehuda, Hichnisa lo, where everyone should note, of course, we're at the top of Daf Samach Zayin Omen Aleph. Amar Rav Yehuda, Hichnisa loy shnei kelim be'elev zuz. A woman brought into the marriage two vessels, and their sum total value was 1,000 zuz. Zuz being a type of coin, you can say $1,000 if you prefer. Vishibhu v'omdu al shnei alof. In the course of time, the two vessels increased in value to be worth 2,000. Now, what had been recorded in the Ksuba? 1,000 zuz of value. The couple now get divorced. The vessels are there, but they're currently worth 2,000. Echod noitloso b'ksubaso. One of the two vessels the woman takes, because that is the value that was guaranteed to her. The echod, the other vessel, again we're dealing with tzon barzel. Now she might very well be able to demand that specific item. However, that value she doesn't have coming to her. And therefore, noisenes domim, she must compensate her husband that's divorcing her, and she then can take the item itself, mitnei shevach beis aviha, based on that concept that it's an item that came from her father's house. My chomash malon, what does Rav Yehuda reveal to us over here in this case? Shevach beis aviha dido have. Is he trying to reveal to us that that items that are brought from her father's house go to her? Oh, Amra Rav Yehuda, Chadazin Rav Yehuda told us that already. And you can see we have a little star indicating Samach Vav Amud Beis. You can look back there and see the parallel star, the line at which that was revealed to us. So why the redundancy? The Gemara answers, Mahu detema, Hani mili hecho de matyo le mishkal b'ksubasa. Avo metan domi u mishkal lo. I might have thought that the woman has a right to demand the item when it is the same value as that which was recorded in the ksuba. But this kind of arrangement where she's demanding the item, in this case the increased value item, which she's taking not under the guise of it having been written into the ksuba. 1,000 was written into the ksuba, not 2,000. So this second item is a situation where she's, albeit she's taking the item, but she's taking it and needs to pay him for it. Maybe that is not the way things are done. Maybe with regard to that second item, the Shevach Beis Ovia consideration isn't strong enough for her to demand it. And maybe he should be able to keep it. So, therefore, Komash Malon, I need this second teaching of Rabbi Yehuda to tell us that the Shevach Beis Ovia consideration is in fact strong enough that she can demand that very item in exchange for compensating the husband. And we don't say that since that second item at this point in time wasn't recorded in the ksuba because of the increase in value, that the husband should be able to demand it. Again, not so. Rather, even then, the wife can demand the very item, But since there was increase in value, she'll have to pay that amount to her husband in cash, or cash equivalent. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us, in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.